Welcome to Cult from the UBC, the culture radio show from your campus newspaper, the UBC, yeah. So it's Thursday, March 14th, 2018.
It's a beautiful day.
Yes, and I am Olamide Olanion, a staff writer at the UBC.
And I'm Eve O'Day, also a staff writer at the UBC.
Yeah.
This show is broadcasted from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Musqueam people here in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah, this week on the show we have AMS election season just ended, right? So amen to that. We talked to culture staff writer Angela O'Donnell about some of the elections coverage and an article she wrote about historical elections meltdowns.
We talked to the director of UBC's upcoming production of The Crucible, Jessica Ann Nelson.
Cool. And we also talked to Paige Jung, editor-in-chief of Outside In. That's a student peer-reviewed publication on international photojournalism. So yeah, that's going to be fun. First off, though, we talked to Angela about the article she wrote. Here's the show. Hallelujah. The AMS elections are finally over. There were cheers, tears, beers. You can check out the UBC's coverage of the elections on our website at ubc.ca. In the studio with me today, it's Angela O'Donnell.
Hi.
Back on the show. She's a culture staff writer here to talk to me about the section's elections coverage. And welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. So you had a story, a brief history of some AMS beefs, mistakes, and meltdowns. It came out last week and accompanied the culture section's coverage of the elections. Could you talk to us a little bit about that, give us a brief synopsis?
So for the story, it was pitched to me, which felt really nice. Like, I felt like, ooh, something is being pitched to me. I'm just not coming up with something. So it was about, the inspiration was for last year's election. There were some candidates who had some meltdowns and issues, and the senior staff writers wanted to like know more about that. So I looked into the UBC archives to see if I could find
historical
context. Stuff. And it was pretty tricky. It was very interesting because in the story, the like first year where I could like solidly find like, oh, this is like a problem was in 2000.
Yeah.
And that one was, I think, one of the like biggest like whole campaign meltdowns because it was, I mean, like anytime there's slates, there's going to be like big drama. But like there was like a big problem with like slates and like seeming to be corruption.
Yeah.
So the 2000 was the 2000 one was a really good one. But then before that, I couldn't find very much information at all. Like the election coverage just like historically was very much like here are the candidates. And then like a week later, here is who won.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so then I like checked that in like the 90s and the 80s. And I was like, oh, this is sort of disappointing. And then I went like further back. And like, I guess the further back I went, the worse it got. Like,
yeah.
It
like now we're doing way much better because we're doing profiles, we're doing like all that like extra information about the candidates and stuff. So like it's like more information, I guess, for the people in like 2030 or something, right?
But then it was interesting because I was kind of like groveling about it. And by groveling, I just mean like straight up complaining. Like, oh, this is so hard.
Why do I have to do this?
And then Sam, the editor, mentioned how like in 1995, the newspapers, before that, the newspaper had been, like, part of the AMS.
Yeah, it used to be an AMS club.
Yeah, so now that it's not, you can totally get away with, like, actually covering the election.
Yeah.
And also going online is much easier to cover elections because, like, something happens, boom, you publish something about it. Whereas, like, in a newspaper, if you read something...
Print,
Yeah, if you read something that happened, like, a week ago, you'd either read it, like, after the elections.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
And it's like fixed. It's like web. Yeah. You can kind of like update information.
Yes, yeah.
And like it's like oh this thing happened when this happened, but like we have like a running story that's like,
yeah,
we're gonna be updating as it goes, right? But then it was like, oh, once we print it, right, we have to wait until the next issue,
yeah,
to like update on that, and after that the elections are over.
Yeah.
Right, so yeah, that's pretty interesting. You mentioned some of the difficulties, but were there any other like difficulties that you faced like in the reporting of the story?
I don't know. I think, yeah, the biggest one was I had such a difficult time finding the information. And then just if I'm being nitpicky with how hard it is to write, it's just because I was looking at the online archives. Just it's so hard to, like, look, it's difficult. The system is built so, yeah, it's difficult to look through them.
Yeah, the system. So if anybody, this is just like, this is like just, I guess we're going to like explain,
yeah,
this. It's literally just like links, hyperlinks to PDFs,
yes,
from like several years, but like they're all just like scattered a little bit, like several like decades are just like
yeah,
arranged differently, and like so there's no way for you to actually just like search keywords,
mm-hmm,
for like stuff that you're looking for. You can just like look elections, you have to actually know the year you're looking,
mm-hmm,
for, and like zero in and just go through every single issue from that year and hopefully you find,
yeah,
something. Yeah. Thank you, that's very interesting. So,
mm-hmm,
what's your, like, your favorite story from this piece? What was like the story that really stuck out to you and like you really just had to like even like you,
yeah,
you wrote about like four?
Yeah.
You wrote about four, and but what's the one that you were like, oh, this is interesting, like you've struck gold with?
My favorite, I don't know. I think there are ones that I like struck gold with. Like the election of 2009 was good because that one had two big scandals.
Talk to us about that.
The 2009 one, there was this hot drama where one of the guys who was running for Board of Governors, who was rerunning, someone had recorded a speech that he was giving to the Friends of Farms group.
Yeah.
And then the election issue that year was there was some debate over whether or not they were going to like take some of the farmland and build on it, right? So then someone filmed him talking about like, if you don't support me, I'm not going to support the farm, and then they put it on like an anonymous website, and then
anonymous website, what, 2009?
Right? Right? It was crazy, and then like that was a whole big thing, and then he won anyway, which I was like, whoa, okay. And then the like that was a pretty big deal, but then the election, it's all elections, like the presidential election, the president was ousted, and then he was elected, then he was ousted, and then he was put back in, but
yeah,
like the waiting time was 20 days.
Yeah.
Which
that,
was,
so that means the other guy, I think the other person was like president for,
yes,
a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, so there's that one, and then like are there any others? I don't know.
My favorite one is the one in 2012 where my favorite one was the beef between like the paper, like the UBC,
ooh,
and the election administrator.
Oh.
I don't know why. I just thought that
what happened
kind of fun.
In that beef?
There was an issue that I had a difficult time finding. There was an inciting incident where I think that a reporter for the paper had asked someone who was running a question, and then they published that, and then like there was issues around that. So then the election
administrator, what was the issue around that? That's like so weird. Anyways,
right?
Yeah, just keep going.
So then the election administrator sort of issued a warning, and then the UBC like fired back and was like, we're not going to take anything from you, we're independent and we will use our independence. And then like the next issue of the paper, she like sent in this letter and she was like, chill out a bit. Like my favorite quote from it was from the paper was, let us remind you that we are an independent media organization, meaning that we are not part of the AMS and could care less about your timelines. For some reason, we think that when we're deciding who will be president of the largest student union in Canada, 7 days of campaigning before voting is too short of a time to have a real debate.
Spicy.
Yeah, and then in the next paper, she like went through every single thing they said in the editorial. She was like, this is wrong, this is wrong, you are wrong.
Cool. So, yeah, what is it about AMS election season that makes, I guess, candidates and elections administrators and like UBC writers and just everybody. So it's like just everybody collectively, everybody except the average Joe, like just collectively combust and, you know, just lose it, I guess.
That's a good question. I don't know if I can answer that, but I think it's interesting to see like everyone in the AMS cares so much and everyone at the UBC cares so much and everyone in like the university administration kind of cares. But then if you're just like talking to someone in class, they don't even seem to know an election is happening.
Yeah, that's actually like the, I think Zach Vissera and Ryan Patrick Jones, RPJ, both wrote an article called Vicious Cycle.
Excellent.
Plug it in, yes. It's about like student apathy. Everybody should go read about it. This is like a big crisis. I think last year there was like 20% that voted.
Yeah.
And that was like supposed to be like a big deal. Like before that, I think it was like 17 or something. So it's like, it's actually like a kind of like a silent crisis a little bit that like nobody even knows about this stuff as much.
So I think it was nice with the culture because I think that people who maybe wouldn't care as much about the election, maybe they would read
They'd
a
be
piece
drawn in.
From the cult
like a
about
fire.
And then maybe they'll care and then maybe they'll vote, which is always wonderful.
So
I mean, also the news is amazing and it's good.
News is a paragon of journalistic integrity.
Yes.
Of course. Yes. So you have a specific, very specific genre of culture writing.
Oh yeah. I don't know how to write anything.
This is like a switcheroo here. You do like a lot of deep dives into history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like your, I guess your beat.
Mm-hmm.
This is your beat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what is it about these kinds of like deep dives into like historical stuff that like really draws you in? Is it like your major? What is it?
I think my best answer would be like in my life, I just really want to know everything all the time.
Hmm.
And I find often in UBC history, it's very difficult to find just like simple things about the history of the campus, right?
Yeah.
Or like you can find them, but you have to go to a bunch of different websites.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's nice to just have like a cohesive way of reading about it in a way that is accessible. Because, I mean, the UBC archivists do so much work.
Yeah.
But that's more in like a very like academic tone. And as you can see from the tone of my articles, very far away from academic.
So I guess like you're really good at trivia or like you are, you love like research papers or something. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Just like, okay, cool. Just putting that out there. Yeah. So just following that same vein, what stories, I guess, do you have coming up that like are equally, not equally spicy, but like potentially as interesting as this one?
I'll have to see. There was something I was just thinking about. I was thinking about like the Knoll outside, which has this like very, like students used to care about it a lot. And
there was actually like a bunch of protests when it was like supposed to be torn down to build the sub. And like, I think the protests stopped it from being torn down completely. So,
I'm not all students, but I just feel like, do students care about the Knoll?
Let's find out.
Yeah, let's find out. Let's do a 1,600 word piece. Do students care about the Knoll? Which sounds...
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Yeah. Yes.
That sounds interesting. I guess they can find it on the website, right? The article website.
Yeah.
You can all find the article on ubc.ca, the culture section.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much, Angela.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
That was myself, Olamide Olanion, and Angela O'Donnell. We were talking about her article called A Brief History of AMS Beefs, Mistakes, and Meltdowns. You can find that article on ubc.ca.
Coming up, we're going to have more cool interviews. Next, we have our interview with the director of UBC's production of The Crucible, Jessica Ann Nelson. After that, we have our interview with the editor-in-chief of Outside In, UBC's photojournalism publication. We'll be right back after these PSAs.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend, and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/Discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at Discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
You're listening to Cult at the UBC, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territories on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Malamdi Alanion.
I'm Eve O'Day. And coming up, we have my interview with Jessica Ann Nelson about UBC's upcoming production of The Crucible.
I'm here with Jessica Ann Nelson. Jessica is currently directing The Crucible at UBC's Department of Theater and Film. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eve.
To get started, where are you from?
I'm from here, BC, so I'm from Langley. It's a lovely little town about an hour outside of Vancouver proper.
All right. Did you go to UBC for your undergrad?
I did. I came here with the hopes of getting into the BFA acting program. That didn't happen. And my kind of desire to be in theater got uprooted a bit, and I had to figure out a new path. And so I did a BA Honors Theater.
So what is your current education status at the moment?
So I am an MFA directing student in my final year. It's a two-year program here.
Okay, and what history do you have for directing theater?
Oh, what history. So when I was here in my undergrad, there used to be two undergrad directing classes that I took because a friend recommended them to me, saying that they would be a good fit. It would give me that opportunity to be more in control of the kind of shows and productions I was getting to be a part of. So I did those. They were with John Cooper. And then that was in my final year, so then I graduated, and I was kind of, you know, let out into the city with the desire to make theater and had no idea what to do. So I signed up with a group of friends to do the Fringe Festival, and then from there I did the Fringe again when I did the on-site, site-specific training program that they have with the Only Animal. Then I started my own company and started self-producing with friends and directing shows that way and just renting out the Havana on Commercial Drive and doing it myself.
And I hear that you have a history of directing for Bard on the Beach.
Yeah, so summer 2016, I applied for their directing apprentice program and was one of the people accepted. And I got to work with Bob Fraser on Othello. And that was a great experience. It was really amazing to have that kind of professional mentorship and experience in the city, yeah.
Okay, so for those who don't know, can you give us a quick synopsis of The Crucible and a bit of its history?
Sure. So for my MFA, I have to do a thesis production, so I chose Arthur Miller's The Crucible. It's an allegory that Arthur Miller wrote in 1953 for the communist scare that was going on at the time and America's hunt for communists in the States. And so he's written about the 1692 Salem witch trials as an allegory for what was happening at the time.
So what are some major themes of the play?
Major themes of the play would definitely be this sense of fear and paranoia of people or things we don't understand. And this feeling that in 1692, the Puritan community was a very strict and regimented time and place to live in. And so you get this feeling that there are groups of people that have been pushed down and are powerless and have been that way for such a long time that then they are rising up against that in a way. They don't want to be so controlled anymore.
Okay, and why is The Crucible a relevant piece of art to be showing today?
I think The Crucible is relevant because in our society right now, there really seems to be this kind of constant barrage of news information about we should be afraid of certain groups of people, they're going to do us harm, and also other groups that are tired of being pushed down and made to feel powerless and taken advantage of and are rising up against that and actually doing something to take a bit of power back for themselves and say, I won't be pushed down anymore.
Okay, on the theater website there, it says MFA director Jessica N. Nelson, that's you, puts a 2018 spin on the classic play, and then there's a quote, which is probably from you. The female characters have been oppressed for so long that rising up against the male-centric theocratic control initiates them to find their power and autonomy. Without spoiling too much, could you give us an insight on what this twist is, or this spin?
Yeah, so I think it links to when I decided I wanted to do The Crucible, and I would talk to family and friends about it. If they know theater and they know Arthur Miller, they feel like they already know that play because so many of us studied The Crucible in high school. Or if they don't know that and you tell them, oh, it's based on the 1692 Salem witch trials and the communist scare in America, they feel like they just understand the play already. They know these characters. They can prejudge them. And lots of the time, people will say to me that John Proctor, who is basically the main character in the show and that it's his journey we're following, will say that he's the good hero and that Abigail Williams, his kind of secret love affair character, is the bad or evil antagonist. And what always bothered me about that is that it's not taking into account the fact that when these two characters started their affair, John's character is in his 30s, Abigail is only 17 at the time. She's also working for the Proctors in their home as a servant kind of thing. And so John is in a very different level of power in the society. He's a man at the time when men just have more power over women. So he has that going for him. He's also her employer and she's his employee. So there's that different level of status and power. And so it always seemed to me that John kind of uses his level of power and status in the society to win Abigail over, and she's only 17, so she falls in love with him. And then when he breaks it off, not because he wants to, but because his wife finds out and kind of forces him to break it off. He gets all crazy and upset that she still wants to be with him, and she tries to find ways to keep the relationship going. People also tend to forget that Abigail's parents were killed in front of her, and so for however many years she's been living with her uncle, who openly kind of resents having to take care of her. So she's not coming from a background where she's shown love and support and what a good, healthy relationship would be like. And so when she's given this feeling of love and safety and someone caring really a lot about her, and it's taken away from her, I just think it becomes more understandable why the character does what she does. For me and the actors, we've really talked a lot about how these characters have both good and bad qualities within them, that we can't blanket statement that this is a good character and this is a bad character, and that we should prejudge them in any way. And for the actors playing John and Abigail and some of these more negatively viewed characters, we've really tried to find the balance, like what are their good qualities, what are their bad qualities, and bring those to light that we can see these are truthful examples of what human beings are like.
So in terms of rehearsal, which I know is still going on the night that we do this interview, what are some most memorable moments that you've had? Maybe something funny or something that you've really had like an aha moment where you've realized something and maybe made a change of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the play deals with pretty dark material and it can be a bit of a downer at times. And one of the things I really wanted to ensure became a part of our rehearsal process was bringing some lightness to it, having a fun, enjoyable rehearsal room. So we would have a 10-minute checkout at the end of each rehearsal where we would do different things each night depending on what we were working on. So one night, because we were really looking at the different levels of status and power that these different characters had in the play, I did this improv game with them where someone gets to sit in a chair and pretend to be a king or a queen, and then five actors come in one at a time as the servant, and they just get to improv. The king or queen gets to ask them to do random things, and at any moment they don't like what's happening, they can snap their fingers and the servant dramatically dies, and they're supposed to do this, you know, big over the top kind of silly death somehow on stage. So that was super fun, being able to end rehearsals on a lighter note that was fun and enjoyable for everyone, that wasn't, you know, ending at the big dramatic moment where everyone dies in the play. Not that that happens, but you know that kind of feeling.
So opening night is Thursday, March 15th. So what are you most looking forward to and most not looking forward to?
I'm most looking forward to seeing how everything has come together and seeing how an audience responds to the play. You start to feel like you're in a vacuum of creation where as the director, I'm supposed to be, you know, representing the eyes of the audience. And when you've seen it over 100 times, probably at this point, you start to lose a bit of that, I think, newness and clarity. And so, yeah, just having an audience to hear where they respond to what's happening on stage is what I'm most looking forward to. What I'm least looking forward to, I think, is just I wish I had another week of rehearsals, which I know everyone feels at some point in theater, unlike other art forms. You know, there's a performance date. If I were just a painter or something, I could keep working on the piece of art until I felt 100% happy with it. But there's a deadline with theater, and the show will happen no matter what.
The show must go on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me, and good luck.
Thank you.
That was Eve interviewing Jessica and Nelson.
Opening night for the show is tonight. You can catch The Crucible March 15th to 31st. Performances are from Wednesday to Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at Frederick Wood Theater.
Cool. We'll be right back, but first, some PSAs.
Allow me to tell you about Unceded Airways.
What's that?
Isn't that some kind of indigenous radio show?
It sure is. Tell me, are you down for decolonization? Yeah. What?
I certainly wish I could hear about indigenous issues, people, and events on the radio.
You're in luck, because Unceded Airwaves talks about all these things and more every Monday morning at 11.
Music from indigenous artists and coverage of all the hot happenings in indigenous art and entertainment.
On CITR 101.9 FM.
Oh, wow. And they broadcast all this from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people?
Find out for yourself. Mm-hmm. Monday mornings at 11. Yeah. Or find episodes online at citr.ca.
Today we're joined in the studio by the Cedar Program Youth.
Where you at?
You're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Kitsilano and around UBC at
On the Fringe Hair Design, Rufus Guitar Shop, Stormcrow Ale House, The Bike Kitchen, UBC Bookstore, Australian Boot Company, and so many more.
Let's see here. God. Ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Isn't there anything? Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
You're listening to Cult at the Ubisi, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia.
We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territories on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, BC, Lower Mainland, Point Grey campus, UBC. I'm Alam Dialanion.
And I'm Eve O'Day. Ola, you were having a lot of fun with that theme music.
Thank you. I was dancing a little bit in the studio, but yeah, it's a great day. I don't know, I just feel very, very positive.
The sun is out.
Yeah, you know, the sun's out, guns out.
No. In fact, the opposite.
Fun's out, yeah. Sun's out, fun's out. So yeah, no, first off, we have our interview with Paige Jung. She's the editor-in-chief of Outside In. They're a student peer-reviewed publication about international photojournalism. We talked a little bit about what that is and you know, what's fun about the job and all that. So stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Here's the interview. Hi, everyone. My name is Olam Dialanion, and I am a staff writer at the UBC. Joining me here in the studio today is Paige Jung. She's the editor-in-chief of the Outside In Photo Journal. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, first off, we're going to start off with the name, right? Outside In. It's an interesting name, but I have no clue where it comes from. So, like, could you kind of, what does that name mean in relation to what the club and the photojournal does?
Yeah, so our photojournal is really focused on international affairs. So the whole point of students going out on exchange or just sharing about their international knowledge is super important for us. So the name outside, the first part of the name, is when students are, you know, having experiences internationally and seeing the world around them. And the second part, in, is when they're coming in reflecting on those experiences and writing about it or taking pictures on it.
Super cool. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So what is the elevator pitch, I guess? Like, when students come up to you and they're like, oh, like, what does the outside-in journal do? Like, how is it different from everybody else? Like, what do you usually, what's your spiel?
Of course. So I guess our main premise for outside-in is that there's a lot of academic journals around campus, and we're actually the only peer-reviewed, so not faculty, peer-reviewed publication for international affairs at UBC.
What does that mean? What does peer-review mean?
Like, that means so student editors are editing people's work instead of sending it to the faculty for review.
Gotcha. Thank you. So how does the production process look like? Do you have, like, several rounds and, like, you just, like, a bunch of judges? Like, how does that look like?
Of course. So we have a journal team. This year we have about 10 editors, graphic designers, event planners. And so we send out a call for submissions. Students can enter as many times as they want, but basically they provide us with a written submission and some photos that they've taken internationally. And we go through about 3 rounds of editing, which takes over 2 or 3 months, over the span of 2 or 3 months. And now we're at sort of the end of the timeline where we're printing the journals and getting ready for our conference.
Cool. So do you have, like, an online version as well? Is it just, like, a print version?
Yeah, so technically we do print versions. So around we print from 80 to 100 copies of the print journal. But we usually do an online version, and we release that after the conference.
Cool. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So just got to, like, zoom in on you. So how did Outside In find you? So, like, tell me the story of how you got involved with the photojournal and the club.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? So I have definitely a passion for writing, and I love traveling, and I wanted to get some experience. So 2 years ago, I was looking at sort of the UBC journals and clubs that were on campus, and I found Outside In, and so I applied to be an editor. This was last year. So last year, I was an editor for the whole year, and this year, I just decided to take up the challenge of being editor-in-chief, and so far, it's been a great challenge.
Nice. How has it been going so far? Just, like, it's been a great challenge. What are, like, the more difficult parts of that, and, like, what are the best parts as well?
Yeah, I guess, editor-in-chief entails a lot of things besides editing. So I guess one of the biggest challenges for being editor-in-chief is sort of organizing all aspects of the journal, so not just editing the journal, but also leading the team and getting the conference together, so getting speakers for the conference. So those are some of the challenges and also stressful parts, but I would say that the biggest reward is that you have sort of, like, a physical, you have a physical version of all the hard work that students have put into this journal and into the conference, and it's great to have that.
Yeah. So you've been talking about the conference quite a bit. So what is the conference? What is the conference, and what does that usually entail?
Yeah, so this year we are having our 5th annual photojournalism conference. So traditionally speakers who are professional photojournalists have come and talked about their experiences, shared with us where they've gone, what they've done, the projects that they've been doing. And it's a great time for students to ask questions about the field of photojournalism and how they can get involved.
So who are these photojournalists that come to speak?
Well, this year, Greg Constantine is coming. He's a documentary photographer and has worked around the world, has been recognized in many different aspects, but his project is actually, right now, is called Nowhere People, and it's a 10-year documentary project, and so he's coming to talk about that, and we're really
Very
excited.
Nice. Cool. So you mentioned that you're, like, nearing the end of your tenure, right? So, like, I don't know if you're going to be doing this next year as well, right? But what's the thing you're going to miss the most about the position?
I think the thing I will miss the most will be just hearing the different stories from different students. It's amazing to hear the experiences that people have
gone on and just shared about overseas and in places you didn't even know existed. Yeah. So I think that's been the most rewarding part for me. It's just hearing those narratives and those stories come out. We actually have a piece this year, and I guess I'll say her name, Avril, wrote about the Amazigh people in northern Africa, and she talked about the agricultural practices that the women are doing there and how it's contributing to sustainability in amazing ways. And so that was one of the pieces that I loved the most this year.
Cool. So what kind of pieces are you trying to usually solicit for, like, submissions, right? Like, do you actually, like, message your friends and, like, hey, like, this is cool, like, send it. Like, what is, like, the brand TM that, like, the photojournalist is, like, looking for usually?
I guess the common misconception is that we are looking for more academic pieces, which is actually not true. We're actually looking more for narrative pieces, and we want to hear sort of your perspective on what you experienced internationally, and we really value sort of that narrative style of work.
Is there, like, a theme this year? Is there, like, because I know the conference has a theme, right? But is that also the same theme of, like, the journal itself?
Yeah, so our journal was based on sustainability as well.
Cool, nice, cool. Do you have any other things to add, like highlights, notes, just anything that we haven't talked about?
I would say that for our theme, A Sustainable Future, what we tried to do this year was actually not just focus on the environmental sustainability part, but actually look more into social, political, and economic side of sustainability. And that's what Greg, our speaker for the conference, will be talking more about, is social sustainability.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool. You're listening to Cult at the Embassy, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. That was myself, Olamide Olanion, interviewing Paige Jung about Outside In. It's a student-reviewed photojournalism publication at UBC. Their conference is tomorrow on Friday, March 16th, so check that out. They have more details on their website. I think we're going to just, like, talk a little bit about different stuff. But, like, just want to talk about, like, because it's a beautiful day and, like, you know, everybody should be outside, or if you're not outside, at least looking out the window or something.
Go for a walk,
you know, go through, like, I guess if you're on UBC, Pacific Spirit Park or something, you know, walk your dog if you have a dog, you know.
Walk, like, your imaginary dog.
Yeah, hug your family.
Listen,
you know,
to a podcast.
Like, love them. Yeah, because, like, it's, I mean, it's the evil of daylight savings. Is over. So, like, now we can all, like, celebrate and, like, you know, actually enjoy, like,
it's light
days
out
now.
It's so late, but it'll still be sunny outside. Yeah. That's, like, my aesthetic.
That's my kink. Yeah, for sure. So what are you looking forward to, like, the most this week, or I guess this weekend?
Well, every week I have a lineup of TV shows to watch, and right now is, like, a really big deal, because last night, well, on Tuesday night, but I watched it yesterday, was the season finale of This Is Us.
Oh, nice. I've never got up to that, yeah.
TV show.
I thought it was, like, sad, but, like, sad happy. Yeah, it's, like,
it's
beautiful.
Very,
yeah,
sad,
it's
happy.
Like
it's
tears
just
of,
tears
like, ugly
of,
tears, but, oh, like, of joy and, like, sadness mixed together.
Ugly tears, yeah. Just, like, relatable stuff.
Interesting.
Anyway, so that happened. I'm not allowed to spoil it because my family hasn't seen it yet.
Hi, Eve's family.
And then last night, but I'm going to watch it today, is the most recent episode of Riverdale. My guilty pleasure.
God, I haven't actually watched past the first season of that. But
do I have license to say how I feel about that show on this?
Yes, you do. Go for it. Yeah.
I feel like I shouldn't. It's so addictive because it's so cheesy and, like,
yeah,
it's all over the place. Like, I could not tell you the plot because, honestly, I'm lost.
I think they do have a plot, but I think it's, like, very, very just all over the place. I feel like
it's
what
just
I,
a bunch,
like,
of sexually teens. Driven teens.
Well, technically not all of them. I guess, like, because, like, Jughead's supposed to be, like, asexual. Or
that is not.
I know it's not canon,
today.
But, like, I know. But,
no, because,
like,
yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. I think they did say that, but that's clearly not followed through because he has relations with Betty.
Fair enough, yeah.
And she, like, oh, my God, the last episode was so awkward because she put on, like, a...
I didn't think, spoilers.
It's not a spoiler. She put on, like, a wig and, like, a weird, like...
Oh, like the first season.
The first season? Oh, yeah, but, like, she brought that character back where she dresses as, like, a sexy, like, dominatrix almost. And I'm like, oh, that's like 16-year-old character. Which is
yeah,
really
it's like there's a lot of stuff that like it. Even like Archie, it's like okay, like they're all like junior
I
high.
I think the yeah, the motto of that show should be one of the first lines that was said in the first episode by Kevin, which is "Oh my God, Archie got hot." That's the show.
pretty much. Yeah, no, I think one of the things I really respect about that show is just like their commitment to just having the genre. So they just have like the vibe going on. So it's like, you know, like another thing I like about CW shows, it's just like they just, okay, we're doing a vampire show, everything's gonna be like weirdly like gothic, and like we're gonna have everybody that we cast is gonna be hot, you know, like they just have this very, very strong commitment to like keeping consistency in like genre and like place and like, you know, like vibe. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I the first episode, I thought it was going to be a mix between like Pretty Little Liars and Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And it is, it has elements of Twin Peaks in that in the first episode, a character like washes up in the river.
Yeah.
Mad Chinamic is in it, who was in the original Twin Peaks. There's a lot of references to it, but it's basically like Pretty Little Liars with like purple and pink smoke and lighting.
I mean, but that's the brand they're going for.
Oh,
the brand they're going
brilliant.
For is like, it's definitely like, oh, we're going for the like noir, like but like super neo noir.
Yeah. You don't really watch the show?
I've watched like a little bit of. Like I have a tweet that's literally like a second season, and it's like. Like me whenever watching Riverdale, it's always you know that scene where Kevin is talking to Betty and like Betty is like investigating like a site like a killer or something, and like he's like, Betty, like he's a psychopath and he's a killer and you are in
your
high school. You're in high school, not the FBI. You know, that's just me every single time I'm watching. It's like, wait, how are these kids not going to jail or like being like reprimanded for like, you know, obstructing justice and like also like putting their lives in like danger all the time.
In one of the episodes, there was like a FBI agent that was like threatening Archie that like, you have to go be an undercover agent for me. And Archie's like, shouldn't I like ask my dad first? And he's like, no, you shouldn't. And he's like, okay.
Wait, so the FBI is actually in the show now? Wow, this is exciting.
Spoiler alert. He's not really an FBI agent.
Well, why would you spoil that on the air?
It's not that big a spoiler.
We're going to get like a bunch of angry calls. And,
I think
like,
we're
going to
get absolutely zero angry calls about that. Anyway, do you have a favorite character from what you've seen?
If Fred or Kevin's dad like ever gets hurt, I will riot. That's
the
pretty
dads?
Much it. Like the dads are like my like all the dads are like peak. Great. Like, I don't think...
They're peak dad?
Yeah, because, like, I don't think... And this is one of the things, actually, one of my criticisms about the show is that they always write, the mothers and, like, the women in the show as, like, just being, like, super neurotic and, like insane almost. And,
one of
like,
them has a brothel.
Exactly, but that's my point. And then, like, all the dads are just, like, even when they're, like, evil
they're
and
wholesome.
Stuff, like, they're all wholesome-ish. Like, they all have scenes. And it's like, what are you trying to... What messages are you trying to, like, pass across to
the
rest of us or something?
My favorite character is Cheryl.
Cheryl is cool.
The HBIC, which has that's an acronym that expresses her, but it has a bad word
what
in
is
it.
HBIC?
I think you should Urban Dictionary it.
Okay, I will.
anyway, so done with Riverdale. Next TV show that I care about, which is airing tonight, but I probably won't watch it until tomorrow, so no spoilers, is the season finale of RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars. Do you care?
Okay, so my sister has explained to me like what RuPaul is and
what
RuPaul's drag show is and Drag Race, and like I get it and I like it because it feels very sporty. I don't know, like it feels very like
there are no sports in it.
No, I know,
although,
but
I guess
it feels very, very like gamifiable, like very, very like I can draw like a bracket up. I can like, you know, like put like a league standing, like, and I like that aspect of it. And I think I would definitely be into it, but like my sister watches it all the time, and like she watched like all the seasons in like a couple of weeks, you know. So like that's like commitment there, and I think I would if I just had more time, to be honest.
That's
but
great.
I think I was rooting for actually I don't remember any of their names, to be honest, but
describe them and I want to see if I can. Is that in the most recent season?
The most recent one.
Okay,
like
them.
The one that was like not like that much of a great dancer, but they used to like always have like great like they made all their dresses by like very, very well. Like I don't know. I think they won this like last season or something. But I don't know. Anyways, besides the point, it doesn't matter.
What do they look like? I want to know who this is now.
Was this
the All Star season?
I don't know if it's the All Star season, but like it
like
was
this year or like,
no? I think it was last year. I think it was from last year.
Was it Roxy Andrews?
No, it wasn't.
Was it Sasha Velour? Was she bald?
No, it wasn't Sasha Velour, but I remember that name. It was in that season.
Shea Coulee?
Another name. Give me another name.
Peppermint?
No, another name.
Oh, my God. Trinity?
Another name.
Valentina?
Another name.
Nina Bonina Brown? I think it was Nina Bonina Brown, the one with the makeup.
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
She was cool.
Awesome.
This is one of my proudest moments is remembering every contestant.
Yeah,
on Drag
I'm just like you're just like listing all the characters. Like, so yeah, this has been your Riverdale annotated guide and also RuPaul's Drag Race.
RuPaul's RuCap.
Yes, is that what it's called?
Sure.
We're gonna brand that now. We're gonna take.
I think that might already be a thing. Anyway, is there any TV media anything you're looking forward to?
Well, I would say like what I've been watching. Right, like I finished Dark. It's this like German, like very. It's like kind of Stranger Things, but like if the kids were older and, you know, like you know how like Stranger Things has been pretty much just like, it's basically propelled by the fact that they have cute kids in it, and it's like lots of like
talented kids.
No, cute talented kids, yes. But that's my point. My point is like, and also the fact that like heavy nostalgia for like the '80s. But like,
I'm nostalgic for it, and I was born in 1998.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is like this show Dark is like it's like being held by like really good writing and like the whole like mystery box. Like we have no idea what's going on in this show even until the finale kind of thing. It's like. But the show is good. It's like very good. Like all the writing from the very beginning means something. Like they give you like hints everywhere, and like you're like, oh, that's like interesting. And like I wonder what's gonna happen in the finale. And like you think they're gonna reveal it, and like they don't. And you're like, whoa, that's.
I hate it when things don't get revealed.
But they reveal enough that you're like in it.
Okay.
Like it's like you don't know what's causing anything, but like you know that some things have caused other things.
Okay.
It's like this kind of weird time travel, like circular, like. Time everything that's happened will happen again and has happened before kind of thing. It's like very very wild. Everybody should watch that. It's very good.
What's your favorite TV theme theme song?
Oh,
I can answer that right away. What is the X-Files?
X-Files is very good. I would like
that
would
alien
put that,
conspiracy yeah, music, sure. Which like is playing in my head constantly.
Yeah,
like I don't trust anything.
I don't think I listen. I think Narcos. Narcos is like it has like this weird, like Latin music going on in like the background, and it's like, the scenes are like they have like, you know, like cars ablaze, you know, they have like people in the streets dead and stuff. It's like very, it's very
sounds violent.
It's about like drugs in Colombia, so like it is very violent. But like it like definitely gives you the feeling of like okay, like. This is what's happening here. Like surveillance is also happening here. Like people are recording stuff. They have like these kind of weird phones. These like
weird phones. You mean phones from the '80s?
Phones from the '80s
with wires.
Not even wires. But they had satellite phones, right? So they had.
Oh,
like,
I see.
Drag it up and stuff.
The share.
Yeah, satellite phones.
Brick phones.
Yeah, okay. Those ones. Yeah. So it's like they. I'm really. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm really into like genre shows. Like I'm really into like.
What's a show if not a genre show?
No, but like when I say genre shows, I don't mean
like period
like
pieces.
I
mean, you
like,
mean
not even
pieces?
Period pieces. More like I would say like period pieces, but I would say like it's a world, and that world like they don't leave that world ever. So
sure.
It's like I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but it's like. The drug wars, right? So it's like we are literally just only talking about like drug wars.
Do you like Game of Thrones?
Stuff. I do. So that's exactly what I mean, right? So it's like I really like to just be immersed in like a world and like never leave it for like several seasons.
Did you like the last season of Game of Thrones?
No,
me
I didn't.
Either.
I like the first few episodes. I think they tried a lot.
Oh,
but,
God.
Like the first few episodes, and then like they really just dropped the ball because they're trying to like set up
Let's
a lot of stuff.
Bring a zombie. Let's like transport a zombie throughout the whole country.
Let's not get into it because
to show
like,
it
we'll spend like another hour talking about
I should stop.
About like just how mad we are about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, sure. I could go on about a lot of TV shows that I'm mad at, but I won't because that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, we just spoke for 15 minutes.
Filled the time.
Yeah, that was the show for the week.
Thanks to Angela O'Donnell, Jessica Ann Nelson, and Paige Jung for coming on the show.
Yeah, the music for this episode was Knock Knock by Poddington Bear from the Free Music Archive. If you missed part of the show or just want to check out our other episodes, you can find our podcast on CITR.ca. Don't miss us too much. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
I'm Eve O'Day.
And I'm Alam Delanion. Enjoy your Thursday, everyone.
Bye.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
This is a call for submissions by the Iona Journal of Economics. We're a student-run academic journal that publishes undergraduate papers on topical issues in economics. We're currently accepting submissions until January 14th. Papers should be approximately 1,500 words, have a primary economic focus, and have received a grade of 80% or above. We're also looking to hire a graphics designer. Please email us at editor@ionajournal.ca for submissions and questions. Thank you.
In the back of my